they did the right thing. I think it was good for them, but they took them off. I think it was a gesture, but it was a big move. People were shocked. I wasn't shocked. But I deal with them, and I know them, and I like them, and I hope we can do something.
It's Friday the 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. You are part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. We'll have the top story about the latest in the China-U.S. trade war. Also ahead, the U.S. has a new ambassador to the U.N., and a village in the Philippines swaps plastic for rice. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he is postponing tariffs on $250 billion in Chinese goods as a gesture of goodwill. He says China asked for the delay in time for the nation's 70th anniversary on October 1st. The increase in tariffs from 25 to 30% was supposed to take effect on that date. The increase is now set for October 15th. Trump's announcement came after China said earlier this week it is exempting a handful of U.S. products from the next round of sanctions.
I think they did the right thing. I think it was good for them, but they took them off. I think it was a gesture, but it was a big move. People were shocked. I wasn't shocked. But I deal with them, and I know them, and I like them, and I hope we can do something.
On Thursday, China extended the latest gesture of goodwill by announcing it is looking into buying U.S. agricultural goods, such as pork and soybeans. Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman Gao Fang said China welcomes the actions from the Trump administration. He adds that China hopes the two sides will continue to create favorable conditions for the trade negotiations. Those trade talks are set to open next month in Washington. But before then, world leaders will gather at the yearly meeting of the United Nations General Assembly. They will see a new face there. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations took up her post this Thursday. The previous ambassador to the U.N. resigned last October. VOA U.N. correspondent Margaret Bashir has more on Kelly Knight Kraft.
Kraft presented her credentials to U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres and then went to the Security Council. She was warmly welcomed by her new colleagues and then cast votes supporting three resolutions. She later told reporters that she is not just President Trump's U.N. envoy, but also a voice for America's commitment to freedom, democracy, and human rights.
In a world marked by humanitarian crisis, the geopolitical challenges, strong American leadership is absolutely critical, and I intend to provide it. I will defend America's values and interests. I will stand by our friends and allies. I will advocate for the poor and the weak. And I will never fail to work with those who genuinely wish to advance the cause of human dignity.
A former businesswoman from Kentucky, Kraft and her husband Joe, a billionaire coal executive, are well known in Republican circles as major donors and contributed $1 million to President Trump's 2016 presidential run. Trump appointed her as his ambassador to Canada 2 years ago. Her tenure was marked by negotiations for the new U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement. Kraft was confirmed for her U.N. job on July 31st, with a slim majority in the U.S. Senate, where some Democrats complained she lacked adequate foreign policy experience.
So, Madam Ambassador, let me be frank. I have deep reservations about your lack of qualifications for such a complex and challenging role. Historically, U.S. ambassadors to the U.N. have brought significant executive experience or experience working directly in foreign policy.
Her extensive absences from the embassy in Canada, more than half of the 608 days on the job, also came in for scrutiny. Kraft has little more than a week before world leaders, including her boss, arrive for the U.N. General Assembly. Longtime U.N. observer Richard Gowan says Kraft will only play a backseat role at the annual gathering.
Her job is to make sure that the president's trip to New York goes well. She won't be doing substantive diplomacy herself. I think Kraft will only really be able to make a personal impact in New York once the General Assembly is out of the way, and she can spend a bit more time building relations with other members of the Security Council and important powers of the UN.
One of the big topics at this year's meeting will be climate change. Kraft's family has ties to the coal industry, and she once told a Canadian interviewer that she believes both sides of the climate debate. Ambassador Kraft replaces Nikki Haley, who left her post 9 months ago. Haley held cabinet rank. Kraft will not, and cultivated a high political profile. Analysts say Kraft is likely to have a more limited role than Haley in setting U.S. foreign policy. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. A Thai court declines to hear the case of the Prime Minister's incomplete oath. Belting out a new protest song is the latest act of the Hong Kong movement. The Prime Minister who brought democracy to Tonga has died. And U.S. President Donald Trump called his former National Security Advisor a disaster on North Korea. Expanded coverage of these stories is on voanews.com. And VOA Asia continues. The Philippines has launched a program that will allow villagers to trade plastic for rice. The program aims to feed the people while cleaning the streets. Jason Albano reports.
In a village outside the Philippine capital of Manila, Veronica Dolorico roams the streets in search of plastic. She's known as the environmental auntie. Collecting trash from her neighbors or simply picking it off the ground.
I feel that our surroundings is really dirty. If I only could, I would pick up all the plastics along the road whenever I walk outside. I'll bring my bag and pick up the garbage if that is possible.
In this village, bags of plastic are more than just waste. Every kilogram of plastic is worth half its weight in rice. For people living under the poverty line, a kilo of rice worth 70 cents can be a financial strain. For Dolorico, a mother of four and the wife of a rickshaw driver, the Plastics for Rice program is worth every grain.
14 kilos na.
It weighed in at 14 kilos of trash, so I got 7 kilos of rice grains. This is a big help for us to have 1 kilo of rice for the day.
The Philippines sits among the world's top marine plastic polluters, according to a joint report by Ocean Conservancy and McKinsey. The country's law on solid waste is poorly enforced and doesn't regulate packaging manufacturing. But the village program is a small step for the country. Village Captain Andor San Pedro says while the program won't help reduce plastic consumption, it can still teach people to properly dispose of waste.
Some people nowadays don't take initiative when there's no incentive. This is what we've thought to do so that they can have food.
San Pedro says that in August, over 213 kilos of plastic was collected and was given to the government for recycling. He also says that the win-win program is only generating more interest among families, a cheaper meal in exchange for cleaner streets.
Happening now in Asia, thousands of Indonesians gathered in Jakarta Thursday to bid a final farewell to former President B.J. Habibie. Habibie died Wednesday of heart failure at the age of 83. You're listening to VOA Asia. Perhaps you or someone you know uses e-cigarettes. They've become increasingly popular around the world and can even taste like bubblegum or cookies. But VOA's Latika Hoke reports the U.S. is preparing a ban on all flavored e-cigarettes.
The announcement comes after teenagers in several states ended up in the hospital with lung problems ranging from difficulty in breathing to severe lung damage after using flavored e-cigarettes. Hunter Sims, a student from Texas, says he almost died from vaping.
It just needs to stop. I think the FDA needs to really crack down before this gets worse.
As more and more kids get sick, parents are increasingly vocal in their demands for a federal government action.
We need to demand a ban on all flavored products, because that's what sucks the kids in. Nobody's going like, oh, I'll just have this that tastes like nicotine. They want the flavors, and the flavors are clearly marketed to the kids.
Trump announced Wednesday that the administration is moving to ban vaping flavors, even if it hurts sales.
Vaping has become a very big business, as I understand it, like a giant business in a very short period of time. But we can't allow people to get sick, and we can't have our youth be so affected.
Health Secretary Alex Azar said about 8 million adults and about 5 million children in the United States use e-cigarettes.
An entire generation of children risk becoming addicted to nicotine because of the attractiveness, appealability, and availability of these vaping products.
Azar said the sales ban will affect all flavors of e-cigarettes except the tobacco flavor. Manufacturers of vaping products will have to seek approval from the Food and Drug Administration before putting any of them on the market.
Tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes, their manufacturers would by May 2020 have to file for approval by FDA of their products. The other flavored product manufacturers can at any time also file, but they would be off the market until approved by FDA.
Some health experts want more for the protection of children.
You know, flavors could exist as long as we're not calling it bubblegum and gummy bear and things that we know are really more marketed towards children.
Last week, Michigan became the first state in the nation to ban flavored vape products. There are concerns, though, that bans could spur illegal sales of restricted items. Experts are calling for more education on the dangers of vaping and concerted efforts to deter minors from starting the habit in the first place. Zlarica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, dog beaches take it to the next level. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
And now this news from VOA Asia. A Chinese woman has been found guilty of trespassing at U.S. President Donald Trump's Florida resort and lying to the Secret Service. Yu Jingzhang faces up to 6 years in prison. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. VOA Asia continues. And now to India, where women are breaking with tradition by managing a railway station in Rajasthan. Reporter Anjana Parishka visited the station to see how the initiative is doing since it launched last year.
Coordinating train movements, handling phones, handing out keys are all in a day's work for Angel Stella. The station master, along with 50 other women, has been running the show at Gandhinagar Railway Station in Jaipur City since last year. It took time to convince skeptical passengers that they were up to the task.
They used to peep either from the windows or the doors, and they used to check it out whether only females are working or some males are guiding, male members or male staff is sitting at the back and guiding how to work. So they do not have that trust that the females, yes, they can work properly.
From ticketing to inquiries and cleaning to security, women manage the counters around the clock. They have established a reputation for ensuring that rules are followed.
Women are stricter with finding people if they're traveling or entering platforms without tickets or crossing rail lines. We call the police. So now they cough up the penalties.
There were challenges, managing night shifts and policing the station with an all-women force. The 7,000 passengers who pass through daily include some who misbehave, are drunk, and even one who tried to commit suicide on rail tracks. It took time to learn how to tackle such situations without relying on men.
Now they feel good. Working on their own has made these women realize their power and their potential. Their confidence and decision-making is building up.
For the team at the ticketing office, the stint here has helped them emerge from the shadow of male colleagues. Managing a rail station was considered a male bastion.
We did our jobs properly earlier also, but people often attributed this to the fact that we worked with men. Our contribution was not counted. We never got the appreciation or respect that we have won now.
But it is the silent message going out to thousands of passengers from an initiative launched by a female railway officer that may have the most impact.
We lack women empowerment in Rajasthan. It's a state where you'll find the literacy ratio in the female is quite low. And in that type of a state where females are kept at homes in the parda system, all sorts of older practices are being followed. But still there, Mrs. Soumya Mathur, our DRM, took a step to prove that, yes, females are not less than anyone.
At a time when the number of women in the workforce in India is plummeting, this rail station signals that they can steam ahead. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Jaipur, India.
And now this news break from VOA Asia. South Korea has formally asked the International Olympic Committee to ban the Japanese Rising Sun flag at next year's Tokyo Games. South Korea called the flag a symbol of Japan's brutal wartime past and compared it with the Nazi swastika. All the big stories come your way on VOA Asia Facebook. And now on VOA Asia, a major new report says malaria could be wiped out in a generation, but only if $2 billion more every year are invested in tackling the disease. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Malaria kills around 435,000 people every year, most of them children. Significant progress has been made this century in fighting the disease, with the number of deaths dropping by half since 2000. The new report, published in the Lancet Medical Journal and written by 41 of the world's leading malaria experts, says the disease could be wiped out within a generation. But it won't be easy, says Professor Jake Baum of Imperial College London.
So, you know, you might think that actually right now we're kind of, that's the trajectory. The challenge is in the last couple of years things have stagnated.
Just five African countries account for half of the global malaria burden. Burundi is in the grip of a malaria outbreak. Doctors say there's an urgent need for investment in healthcare. Dr. Albert Mborane of the St. Assisi Anti-Malaria Centre says everyone should know that malaria is a disease of the poor. And in terms of national health policy, malaria remains the leading cause of death. The report authors estimate that $4.3 billion is spent globally on fighting malaria each year, but it says another $2 billion will be needed annually to wipe out the disease by 2050. It will also require new tools, which might include so-called gene drives that could make mosquito populations collapse or render them resistant to the malaria parasite. Again, Professor Jake Baum.
We need every piece of the jigsaw puzzle. So to say that just controlling vector would be the magic bullet, or just coming up with a new drug would be the magic bullet, I think most would agree that's naive. I think we need the new frontier of tools that maybe don't even exist yet.
A malaria eradication program was attempted in the 1950s, but abandoned a decade later. New focus and investment in recent decades, particularly from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, has given renewed impetus. But there are some concerns. Again, Professor Baum.
The last thing we want is to start saying we're marching towards eradication, but then you get that donor fatigue of stakeholder fatigue of we're just not getting there, we're just not making progress, this is failing.
The United Nations says better overall healthcare is critical. Dr. Pedro Alonso is the Global Malaria Director at the UN's Health Agency.
Without adequate healthcare, people-centered, properly financed systems, we will not achieve eradication.
The Lancet report authors say malaria eradication will require huge ambition and commitment, but the social rewards will be worth the investment. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Surfing is an ancient Polynesian art, but it became a craze in the U.S. and Australia in the 1950s. These days, people aren't the only ones surfing. Anna Rice narrates this story about a unique surfing school for dogs.
A surfing class is about to begin on one of San Diego's beaches in the state of California. The students are dogs who came with their owners for support.
This is Jamba. She's a 2-year-old golden retriever. Yeah, it's her first time. We'll see how it goes.
Are you in control of the board?
Yes! After instructions are given, it's time to head to the water. The ocean greets new surfers with very mild waves, perfect for beginners.
And to make them comfortable, you have to, like, actually talk to your dog and tell them, good dog, don't make them feel scared.
Each 4-legged student gets his or her own instructor and surfboard. The owner is always nearby as well for moral support.
Her name is Tubby, and she just turned a year old, and we just thought it would be fun because she loves the ocean and water.
Well, they're pretty good balance. The main thing for the dog is to stay in the middle or the back of the board, and that makes it a lot easier.
Each dog gets their own special board, picked according to the dog's size and height. The taller the animal, the bigger the board. Harvey is a little nervous. He's never surfed before, but it seems he'll do just fine.
He's 11 months old, and it's his first time, and he did fantastic.
Every dog gets 10 tries to catch a wave. That's enough to see if the animal might actually enjoy surfing. Some take to it right away.
He really, really likes it. I think he's definitely getting a lot more balance, and like we're out there, and he wants to jump on the board. Like he loves it.
For those dogs that get nervous in big waves, training takes place in a calm spot. Each lesson is an hour long. No one seems too surprised at the sight of puppies on surfboards. After all, California is the home of U.S. surfing, so why shouldn't dogs be out there as well?
It's a variety of things. Fun, you're out in the water, very healthy for your dog, and for yourself. It is a lot of work when you're out there. It's not that easy.
After a number of lessons, the dog can take part in annual surfing championships. Rusty is a professional. He'll compete later this month.
Took lessons here, and he's been surfing for about a year now, and just loves it. We go out in the water. We live in Mission Beach. Yeah, it's a great bond. I mean, he just really absolute trust when your dog's out there with you. He just totally trusts you there in the water. He knows you're going to keep him safe.
Each class costs $25, and the instructors all share two big passions, love for surfing and, of course, love for dogs. For Christina Shevchenko in San Diego, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers at the University of Nottingham, England, conducted a new study that suggests coffee could become an effective weapon in the battle against obesity. It turns out we actually have two kinds of fat, white or bad fat, the stuff we try to shed, and brown adipose tissue, also known as brown or good fat. Scientists say this good fat uses the bad fat, along with sugar, as fuel to burn calories and produce heat. Along with a number of other positive benefits, the heat produced by the brown fat also helps to keep us warm when it's cold. To make their findings, the researchers had their test subjects drink a cup of coffee. Soon after, they thermally imaged areas of the volunteers' bodies where the good fat is stored and found the coffee did help stimulate the brown fat to produce calorie and body fat burning heat. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, and our interns, Michelle, Afra, and Hayoung. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Enjoy your Friday the 13th.